To my mind. My name is Al Nichols, and you're listening to The Elemental Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me here. This is entry number 66. About 2 weeks ago, the Supreme Court of the United States made a ruling, finally, about marriage equality. Maybe you've been off planet, so I'll remind you of what happened. Basically, we won. That's right, and I don't just mean people of the community. I mean everybody won. This is one of those moments that it was really, I was just proud to be a part of this world at this time, because you can look back at a lot of things that we remember from history, and usually the big monumental ones are also kind of terrible, and there's extreme ones too. I mean, I was alive during 9/11. I was 17 years old. My birthday was 1 month later, and I turned 18, and I remember every single moment the day the towers fell. Every single feeling and experience that my mind had at that time, it was world-changing for me, and it really showed me some of the worst in humanity. After the events, it showed me some of the best of humanity as well. That's one of the beautiful things that can happen, even in tragedy, is that you are reminded about why we're so great, why we're so wonderful, why we should be here. You know, I think sometimes people ask that question, like, why do we even deserve to be here if we act this way? Well, it's in those moments of tragedy, and it's unfortunate that the best features of us get highlighted in those situations, but we do have to take away and remember that, you know, I don't know, it kind of reminds me of a lot of Star Trek episodes, you know, especially with Q. Like, what gives you humans the right to explore space? You're like you're a parasite, basically, or whatever. And some of you are rolling your eyes right now because you hate Star Trek, or you're just like, you super, super duper dork. I don't care. I like Star Trek, and you can go fuck yourself. But anyway, it does kind of remind me of that, like those questions of why we deserve to exist, what is our right and our, I don't know, all these different perceptions about, you know, how we live our lives and what we're doing. And look, I know we fuck up a lot. We do. As humans, we screw up on the constant. You know, it seems like every second, every millisecond, we're doing something really stupid. But every once in a great while, we do something that I think shows the beauty of and the possibilities of what we can be. The Supreme Court decision, 5-4, shows us exactly what we have the ability to be, how amazing and great we have. That's part of our potential. And we did something that we, you know, we have a culture that for a very long time has looked upon untraditional relationships and people who fall outside of the definition of normal. And I have been one of those unfortunate people, but at the same time, fortunate individuals to experience that. Because now I know that I never wanted to be normal. Even though desperately in my youth I wanted to reach back and just be like, just be normal, right? Just fit in. I'm glad I didn't, because I wouldn't be the person I am now if I had gone through, you know, childhood with, and I'm not saying I appreciate the bullying and everything like that. People like to turn things on their head like that and say, hey, if you hadn't been bullied, you wouldn't be this amazing person you are now. No, in spite of all of that, I am the amazing, wonderful person that I am now. But, you know, in this particular moment, our society was changed forever. You know, the law, these protections that are given by the law, now apply to a group of people so that they can go out and live their life exactly the way they see fit, without obstruction from, because before it was society and the law was against us, right? Like, we didn't really have the ability to choose our own destinies, our own fates. And we were told that there was something abnormal about us, and that's why we didn't deserve the same rights and justices as everyone else. But that's absurd, right? We're all made and created equal. All right, it's part of the Declaration of Independence. You know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. When you look at that document and you measure up where we've been as a society, and you measure it up to the black community, or anyone of color for that matter, when you measure it up to the gay community, the trans community, and all these different groups of people, how far have we fallen short from that declaration? It seems like we have spent the last 250 years trying to rectify vast mistakes. Because see, when you read that document during that time, it's powerful. The literature, what they did there is amazing. And they couldn't even see the fullness of what they were trying to do. Because some of them, for that, it was like all men. Yeah, all white men are created equal. That really is the statement that's being made by these people. But they just end up wording it in such a way where even though they may think one thing, they're actually saying something much grander, much broader, even above themselves. So when I look at this country, when I think about those words and I see where we are now, we are taking steps to actually correct an injustice that has been going on since the formation of this country and has been a part of our world for millennia. You know, we have been around for quite some time and we seem to keep getting these basic things wrong. And every society that's come before us, you have seen this pattern of failure. You have seen this oppression of people. So when the Supreme Court of the United States comes out and says, go out there and be happy, that's a powerful statement because that's exactly what it is. Go out there and be happy with the person that you choose to be happy with. That's not the man. If you're a woman, not the man, the husband you can go be happy with. Or if you're a man, the wife you can go be happy with. It no longer is only applicable to people who fall into this very narrow definition of what marriage is. And I've heard a lot of the definitions of marriage in the last couple of weeks since the ruling. And I have to laugh because especially when people are talking about traditional marriages and how we look at marriage in this country and how God sees marriage and all that. And I'm like, well, we changed the definition of marriage a long time ago. We did that through the fact that we disrespected it, that we completely disregarded the sanctity of it, supposedly. You know, when people say like to have and to hold through sickness and health as long as you both shall live, and then it's like three in and you're like done. Right? 3 years in and that's just it because you can't reconcile your differences. And well, one of the big truths is that we live in a vastly different world than people in the past. And we talk about traditional marriages, atomic families back in the 50s. And like those people stayed together. I'm like, yeah, they stayed together, but in spite of each other, they hated each other. Talked to a lot of those people. They weren't really happy. They just stuck through things, even abuses, even torments and traumas, because that was the only thing that was acceptable in their society. They were living in a backward society. And what they were going through was wrong. Those people actually should have probably gotten divorced. We just live in a better state of being today than they did then. We're more open and honest about how we feel, what we want for our lives, and we're not willing to settle for anything that falls short of what we actually deserve. We don't deserve to be mistreated by another person. If your spouse, for whatever reason, takes out all of their anger, all of their burdens out on you, that's not something you deserve. Everyone has to take responsibility for themselves. And also, even when it's not a situation of that, because I know plenty of marriages that fell apart because of just fundamental differences, people growing apart. I've known about marriages where people had a fundamental idea of what they wanted, like either didn't want children or wanted children. And marriages fell apart because of those reasons. There's nothing wrong with that. Those people weren't in the wrong. You know, they just made decisions that were right for them. And usually what would happen too is they would start on the same page and then grow apart. And that happens. In life, we grow apart. We change. We become different people. And sometimes there are people who will always be a part of your life. I have people like that. They will always be family to me, no matter how much we change and grow. You already know that. In marriages, though, you're not only talking about a familiar family commitment, you're also talking about love and compassion and romance. And those things are on a sliding scale constantly. You want that to be fixed, but unfortunately it's not. And that's just a harsh reality for a lot of people. That's why we're able to fall in and out of love. You know, that's why our feelings change for someone. That's why romance is such a fickle thing. And a lot of times you want something to be long-term, and then sometimes it actually is. You know, for some people, they click together, that's fine, that's perfect. But there are moments in our life where we just have to acknowledge that even though we made a commitment to someone, maybe it's not a lifelong commitment. And I know, it sounds like I'm really just kind of dogging the institution of marriage, but that I'm just making the point, though, that the definition of marriage has already changed far longer before we made this decision finally in this country that marriage equality was essential for everyone, you know? And now, you know, everyone will go through the same things, right? They'll start discovering that same process for themselves, you know? I think, though, I mean, I think if you come from the gay or lesbian community and you try to go get, you now have the desire to get married to somebody, I think you've already gone through a lot of shit together. And I think you exactly know what you want for your life. So maybe it'll bring a little bit more definition and clarity, but there'll still be divorce. There'll be divorce all the time. So, anyway, I don't know. I don't want to get too lost down these rabbit trails. My brain likes to lead me. But, you know, basically it's just to say that anyone who said that the definition of marriage won't be changed, it already has. And it was actually the people who usually stand behind religion, they're the ones who changed it. We live in a culture where most people, even in Christian families, the divorce rates are very high. And preachers and pastors know that if they want to keep people in their church, the last thing they need to do is stand behind a pulpit and condemn people, especially when those divorces were over spousal abuse. You know, it's like they can't stand up there on their high horse anymore and say these god-awful things. Some try to, but guess what? They're not too popular. You know, if you want to be a successful ministry in today's age, you have to sometimes make concessions and change the things that you think. Which then leads me to my other point about all of this. So, in the last couple of weeks, I'm sure you've been a part of this as well, there's been a lot of religious talk about homosexuality, and you've probably seen things like I have. In fact, there was one pastor that I used to, he actually was at the Bible college that I was at. He's a man that I actually greatly respect. I still do, even in spite of what he said here, because there's a lot of ministries out there who are very self-serving, what the people say, what they do. It's always about, like, you know, there's a lot of churches out there that's just about pulling in a lot of money and very self-serving, not really helping the people. You know, mega churches are a classic example of that, you know, in a lot of cases. I'm not saying all of them, but go look at the tithing records, go look at the giving records of those ministries and see what they're really putting their money into a lot of times. And then you'll find that a lot of them don't want to talk about their spending, which is a totally different issue. I'll probably get into another podcast about it. But anyway, so this particular minister I knew spent a lot of money on children in other countries and building houses and shelters. And that's exactly what I think of when you should, when you say that you're a follower of Jesus, that's what I hope that you're doing, is efforts like that. It doesn't mean that it has to be in another country, but efforts that actually help your people, where you're actually connecting to whatever group you are shepherd over, right? And this particular minister I know does that, but when it comes to marriage equality, when it comes to homosexuality, he's also one of these people who unfortunately just doesn't get it yet. Hopefully he will. I'll give him time. I'm not calling him out. I'm not going to say his name or anything like that. I've said plenty of ministers' names here on this podcast before. You know I'm not afraid of that. I just hope this is something that, with this particular individual, that changes. And I did respond to a Facebook post where he mentions the terms unconditional love versus unconditional acceptance. And you already probably have an idea of what that means. It means, oh, you love everybody, but you kind of, you're not supposed to accept the sin. You're supposed to reject the sin. You hate the sin, right? The problem is when someone's gay, you're calling something a sin, but it is a part of their life. It is not a choice that they made. And so then this unconditional acceptance and it's all bullshit. You hate the person then. Because that's the thing that many Christians don't understand when they say something like that. In fact, I think it's almost better in some ways when a person just puts their true feelings out there rather than try to hide behind, colorful language, right? Not colorful language, but flowery language. I cannot talk. I just have no ability to speak. I mean, and I know it's really abrasive and you really despise those people who go out there and say things like God hates fags and whatever, but, you know, at least you know where they stand. Essentially, they're saying the same thing too. That's the thing that gets lost in translation. And a lot of Christians think, well, that's fine. I mean, because look, they're not going out there and saying these horrible things. I'm like, yeah, they are. He just said, you hate the sin but love the sinner. The problem is, though, again, thing that there's so much proof that backs this point up is that you do not choose these things for your life. I did not choose to be trans. People who are gay, people who are bisexual, people who are queer, people who, especially if you're part of the QIA and the LGBT, QIA, queer, intersex, asexual, those are things you don't change. I mean, you don't make those decisions. It's not demonic oppression. You can't prove demonic oppression, okay? What you can prove is homosexuality, not only because of all the scientific studies that have been conducted, but also because of the psychological studies that have been conducted. And also, I think it's very simple. I think this is the point that I always get to with everyone who ever tries to debate why I live the way that I do or other people live the way that they do. Why would a person willingly choose to put a target on their head? I mean, if I, going back now in my life, if I could have chosen at the very beginning, like, well, you have two paths here, okay? You have the path of least resistance, where everything in your life is going to go smooth, you're going to be accepted by people, you know, moderate level of bullying, whatever, but you're just going to be cool and fine, you'll be happy, and, you know, you'll be content. Everything about you will blend in with everyone else. You won't be extraordinary, but you won't be, you know, I mean, and it's not to say that people who fall into normal traditional standards, it doesn't mean that they're not extraordinary people themselves, but again, it just means that, you know, it's like, it's a lot easier to live life when you come from a world that accepts heterosexuality and rejects homosexuality, accepts traditional gender binaries and rejects non-traditional gender binaries. When you go through life that way, it's like, of course, like, I think at the beginning of most people's lives, it would be, I'm going to choose the easier path. Why? Because I want to be happy. I don't want to be condemned. I don't want to be a part of a group that's constantly alienated and attacked. And that's what you're basically saying there, you know? That you actually think that people would choose that, right? That they would choose the sinful lifestyle. Why? You know, I mean, and also then it has to come back to the point, too, where I have to explain to many Christians, like, you're not the ones under attack here. You keep painting it out like you're the victim, like someone's coming against you, coming against your faith, your belief. No one's saying you can't believe what you believe. We're just asking you to be a little bit more gracious and open up your eyes a little bit. Whether you do or not, that's still your choice. But for someone like me, I still get people who sometimes will catcall me on the street, say some pretty awful, god-awful things, okay? I've heard some pretty crazy shit. You know, it's like with Caitlyn Jenner, for instance, when she came out, you know, go and read a thread sometime. You know, I think it was like Atlanta Housewives or something like that, that I mistakenly clicked a link one day because a friend of mine quoted on or commented on something. And I was like, I wonder what she said about this, because it was some interesting article about, like, you won't believe what Caitlyn Jenner's done now. And I click on it, and it's the most atrocious statements ever made by man. You know, it's a bunch of people in a very bigoted lifestyle throwing out scriptures and all sorts of stuff that they have no idea what any of those mean either. But they're just trying to throw out something that supports their bigotry. Okay? Because that's all it is at the end of the day. It's not fear. It's just being an asshole. And there's a lot of people out there who just are assholes, especially to people who are different. So again, why am I going to choose something like that? If I could easily just say, hey, I'm not trans anymore. Look, I'm a heterosexual guy. Make it a lot easier finding a girlfriend, you know, finding someone that, or, you know, anyone who I would want to spend my time with and build a relationship with. Because that would be a lot easier. As it stands, if I go out on a date with someone, I'm always asked, are you interested in guys at all? Which is them trying to figure out if I'm gay or not. Because then they don't want to spend any time with me. It's like, I have to be really clear a lot of times too. If I even say something like, I have always been interested in women, but I am also interested in transgender people. Because that is actually how I stand. I've always seen myself as someone who's interested in women. But as time has gone on, I have seen other transgender individuals out there. And I'm like, absolutely gorgeous. Of course I would spend time with them. Why? Because they're a woman. That's the way that they see themselves. That's the way that I see them. Okay? And for a lot of people, those are triggers because they don't understand. Right? Oh, you are gay. It's like, no. But see, it's like, again, just illustrating the difficulty it is for me to live my life. Now, given the choice now, gone through everything that I have, being who I am, would I make any changes to who I am at all? No, not even one. I know I go through a lot of shit in my life. I know maybe I would have had a lot more success had I come from a traditional background, right? You know, I mean, I came from a church background. I had a lot of success actually in the religious world, especially business-wise. Now that I've come out, yeah, it has done a lot to my life that in some cases have been very difficult. Finances are always something that I deal with. They're a problem for me. You know, I want to be creative. I want to keep doing what I do, and I find ways to make that happen. But yeah, it makes it a lot more difficult now to live my life because I can't go back and get work from the church world. They've rejected me. They've rejected me because of the way that God created me. And I'm not out there, and I mean, also maybe because of a few of my religious stances now that I have, but a lot of that is formed, unfortunately, because of the way that I've been treated. So, you know, it's like, well, I still follow the principles, the code, the lifestyle of Jesus. It's, you know, lost on a lot of Christians because they don't live their lives that way. And then going back to that, you know, when you start hearing people talk about verses and things that condemn homosexuality and all these things, I had to make a point to that particular pastor that I mentioned earlier when he talked about, you know, unconditional love, unconditional acceptance, and also the term lifestyle got thrown around when it came to, because again, it's something not understood. You can throw a million pieces of proof in front of their eyes. It only takes this one scripture in the Bible for them to completely disregard all of it. But let's go actually to that scripture in the Bible where they talks about homosexuality, because it is talked about. It's talked about especially in Leviticus, which is a book about the law. There's a lot of laws listed there. And in the majority, most of the laws that are listed in that book are not practiced today. For example, when you think of the traditional model Christian, I think you think of this little atomic family, right? You know, you got your mother, your father, little Billy and little Sally, you know, whatever. It's a very outdated view of how families actually are. But you always think of like these clean-cut guys. You think of, you know, polo shirts. I don't know. I mean, whatever the hell you come up with when you think of, you know, Christian families. I always kind of get the Calvary Chapel vibe in my head, right? You know, which is very Californian, you know, but, you know, people with Hawaiian shirts on for men and women with like, you know, flower dresses on, stuff like that. But the reason I bring that up and these, and no matter how, what way you see a Christian family, right? You know, when they're a little perfect, kind of family picturesque kind of thing that you're picturing right now in your head. You know, the clean-cut hair. Well, that's actually a sin against God. You're not supposed to cut your hair. Trim your beard? Don't think so. That thing's supposed to be long, furry, and full. You know, clothing of mixed materials, mixed, you know, items, right? You know, most shirts are made out of cotton, polyester, rayon, or a variety of other things. That's a sin against God. You're not supposed to wear anything of mixed fibers. It's all supposed to be unified. You know, the hems of your garments are supposed to, they were supposed to kind of close off in like basically tassels. If you're a woman and you're going through your menstrual cycle, well, I have some bad news for you. You're supposed to be outside of the city, right? Going through that time of your month in the worst conditions possible, just so you don't offend the people around you for some whatever reason, right? Children, if you've disobeyed your parents, if you showed any disrespect to them, if you've back-talked to them, well, you should have been stoned. You know, there are so many things listed out that, of course, are not practiced today. And it's a very simple reason why not. Because they're ridiculous. I mean, look, you know, people don't say it. And a lot of times Christians are actually afraid to express those things. But the truth is, they're not going to do them. Try to force a Christian to do any of those things. And they are going to, if they had to do that, they would not identify themselves as Christian. They would probably actually go over to either being an agnostic or atheist, or go over to a more convenient religion that does not require them to do so much. As it stands, Christianity doesn't actually require you to do that much. The thing about Christianity, the thing that drives me crazy, is that they choose the easiest things to follow, and then occasionally they choose these things that get to, that just so happen to support their bigotry and intolerance, right? And a lot of times, if you really ask a Christian how they feel about these issues, they're telling you what they've heard. They're not really telling you what they feel, because it's not something that they're in touch with. I think, unfortunately, when you become a part of a religion and you don't really have a faith and you don't really think and process things, you just become conditioned to recite. I mean, we talk about this. I've talked about this with a lot of friends, but, you know, even back in our church days, you know, it's so weird. Now I can't do it because actually it was something that I really pushed myself hard to do, but verse memorization, right? Christians make a big deal about knowing the Bible and reading the Bible and memorizing the Bible. And you have some people, your core group, your dedicated people who absolutely do that. They remember verses. But when it comes to context, when it actually comes to what it means, how you feel about it, that's not something that's usually up for debate. It's supposed to be just like, well, it's this way, right? Even though it's debated all the time. That's why we have a million denominations out there in the world, is because people have read one thing, another person reads another, or reads the exact same thing, I mean, and they completely fight over the issue because they actually see it in two different ways. And they split their entire congregations and churches off of little tiny fundamental stuff like this, right? Becomes fundamental. Really, it's just someone else's interpretation. It's not worth. I mean, because look, you know, the problem is with the Bible, it's not something that is abundantly clear. It actually can go in a lot of different ways. And because we don't actually have original manuscripts back from the time that they were originally written, we're always basing the versions that we create off of inaccurate books, and it gets labeled holy, though, right? And though people, they don't actually have an understanding of where this stuff comes from, they accept it. Because that's what you're taught to do with religion. That's what you're taught to do the moment you're born and brought into a religious family, is to accept the faith of the family. And so it just gets embedded in your head. You don't really think about things, it doesn't really process, and so that's what ends up happening there. So when you actually talk to people about homosexuality, you have to ask, well, how is this actually benefiting the church? I think a lot more people would actually be going to church if this wasn't such a hot issue that people from behind the pulpit think that they should talk about. Or there are a lot of churches too, and I actually group them in with the ones as well that say a lot and usually are very condemning, the ones that don't say anything. Because in a way, you're just agreeing with what other churches are saying. If you're not standing out there for something good, something right, if you're not actually, if you call yourself a Christian, but you're not taking the stance and being bold and saying the things that you know to be true in your heart, if you're not going out there and doing that and defending people and accepting everyone, then you're just as culpable as the people who go out there and condemn and are evil. And we can talk about the differences between good churches and bad churches, right? But I'm always going to say the good churches are the ones that are not afraid to talk about these issues. So even the ones that are hateful, I give them a little bit more acceptance just over the fact that at least they're willing to talk about it. Because I'd rather get it to the point where a church that doesn't talk about it, that makes no stance, I don't know. For me, it's always been an issue of like, stand your ground. Like, because at least then I can talk to you. If you're trying to hide what your true feelings are, then we'll never get to the core of the problem. Because see, even with a hateful person, even if they're closed off in their heart, there's always the possibility that you say something that reaches them. That has happened in my life. I've seen that actually happen with people. That's happened to me. I have had people come to me and I was completely closed off. And then they said something, they shared something, and it opened up my heart and changed my perception. And you may not be the one person that does that. You may be one of many people who are a part of that journey. But still, things change. There's plenty of people who change their stances on this stuff all the time if you're willing to go out there and look at those people and see who they are. But anyway, you know, so when a lot of churches go out there and they start speaking about a lot of this stuff and they get into the details about why homosexuality is a sin, again, what I said is, how does it benefit them? And let me give you a little insight. If you're not part of the church world, this is why I truly believe that homosexuality gets talked about so much from behind pulpits. The same as at one time when churches were talking about interracial marriage. I would go back and look up a few of these things. You can see the messages, the things that are being said repeated time and time again, but from completely different generations. And the message gets, you know, it just repeats. There's nothing really different about it. But anyway, just to get down to the issue, the reason I think that it is such a hot button issue. I know a lot of churches, right? I've worked for many of them, and I've seen the ugly sides, and I've seen the best sides. And trust me, actually, for me, if there were a few things going on in particular churches that I knew of, like actually here in LA, you have a lot of progressive churches that do not condemn homosexuality. They're actually very accepting of it. And they understand that there's a lot of Old Testament law that we don't follow today. And they're not trying to dredge it up from the past. You know, they know that you can't just go back and hand select certain things. They also understand that basically Jesus was a person who loved people, accepted everyone, healed everyone who came to him, fed the hungry, you know, ministered to the poor, and basically never showed any type of favoritism to people. All right, that was Jesus. Okay, so when you look at what's going on currently in churches, that's not what's happening. You see it very opposite. You see a lot of churches that are either focused on money, and usually trying to get as much of that out of the people as they possibly can. There's a few of them that are right now being investigated by the FBI. I think it's an interesting look into all that. But then you have churches that get on these issues, and usually they're not the same ones. The ones that are about finances are usually not talking about homosexuality. But it makes you wonder, they're usually bigger churches too. They're usually the ones that are railing against groups of people. They're bigger churches like Franklin Graham, right? You know, he's a prominent minister, you know, the son of Billy Graham, you know, and he talks about homosexuality quite frequently. There are other ministers as well across the country who get into these issues, make it very firm what their stand is, politicians as well. So why do they do that? Because in a lot of us, it provokes those feelings of fear. And when you put people in a position where they feel like their faith is being threatened, they actually get more fierce. They become more warrior-like, right? They go on the offense and try to go after people because they feel threatened. When you put people in that type of mindset, it makes them actually more active givers in your church, all right? So it is a financial thing as well. It makes them more active in the participation of what's going on. If you were at a church and you didn't feel threatened and you were just sitting there and your only motivation to come back every Sunday is because you enjoyed the message, it doesn't pull as many people. I've been to plenty of churches where that's all the people there do. They're all about just the ministry of the message of Jesus and about being very humble. And I mean, they're just humble people themselves. It's not all about humility and everything like that. But, you know, they just care for one another. They don't have any condemnation or judgment against any groups of people. You'll never hear a message about how God hates gay people and about how he's so disappointed in judgment coming against this country. You'll never hear a message like that at all. And they get labeled by many of the churches who do go on the attack as being passive, as being, you know, wishy-washy, you know, not really being full of the Spirit and all this other nonsense. No, they're ministering to their people. They're giving people there something that's actually valuable instead of fear. All right? So when we talk about homophobia, actually, that is the part that is true. Fear is what starts the instigation of this, and it's usually started behind the pulpit. You know, and the sad thing is, too, a lot of the ministers who currently carry out these traditions today about talking about these things, you know, you're just talking about bigotry and prejudice, and they have a way of being able to back that up biblically, and it manipulates people, and then there's side benefits as well. There's a lot of people, too, who've just been raised in the lifestyle for so long that they don't know where the thought of this began. They don't know where this victimization mentality started, but they do feel it. And the reason they talk about it and are so passionate about it and get on the attack about these issues is because they are responding to basic feelings that have been there for far too long, and they can't identify where they started or where they came from. And it gets tied into faith. It gets tied into the way that you see God. You know, you don't see Christians on the street being beaten, being bludgeoned, being murdered. You don't see a high suicide rate in the Christian community, but you see an astonishing one in the trans community. I'm not saying these things don't happen to Christians from time to time, but to the frequency that it happens to anyone in the LGBTQIA community, not even close, not even remotely close. I'm not beating on people's doors trying to convert them to being trans. And I'm also not on television trying to convince people to attack and to disrespect an entire group of people. I have my beliefs, I have my faith, and I also know their proper place in my life, and I know that they're mine, not everyone else's. And I know I shouldn't go out there and try to enforce my will on other people. But do you see this pattern repeat time and time again in churches? And at the end of the day, it's all about keeping people in the pew, or in the pews, rather, not just in the pew, the multiple of them, you know, because there's so many damn churches out there that are teaching this kind of stuff right now. I came from a church, and the sad thing was the pastor was gay, and he went on a tirade against gay people on a pretty frequent basis. I remember way too many messages that went against the gay community. I remember messages going against trans people. I remember the word tranny being thrown around along with transvestite and everything else. You know, I remember my young ego, my young mind being completely bombarded and feeling guilty and condemned because I wasn't like the rest of the people sitting around me. And maybe I was. Maybe there were other people who were just like me. But I remember feeling that way and confused and not understanding why there was so much hatred for people who thought and felt the way that I did. And this is something that we see constantly going on still in the church world today. This is something that has been brought up time and time again, even though the arguments never change, right? The arguments absolutely never change in the face of proof. Because, like I said at the beginning of all of this, these simple verses that are not talked about very frequently throughout the Bible, and a lot of times are pulled inaccurately, taken out of context, or even they're taken in the context that they were, but then they're not looked at the time that was. My question is this always, when I talk to people who try to quote back to me Levitical law, why are you trying to enforce the laws and principles of a culture that has been long dead and is dead and gone and no longer still around today because of the very things that you were trying to quote from, the very ways that people live their lives? Because this is all condemnation. This is all, no one can live up to these standards because there's so many laws here. There's so many things that you have to do that even by accident you're going to commit these sins. Even the Jewish people knew that. They knew that they could never be sinless, right? Which is why they had to give blood offerings, usually of animals, and they had to try to cleanse themselves of the sin that they had, and they couldn't go beyond the shroud, right? The shroud was this thing in the temple, and that was where the Holy of Holiest, right? So again, if you don't know anything about Christianity this or Judaism, this is a little bit of, you know, a little insight into what's going on there. But so these, when we get into New Testament, when we get into the New Testament, this has always been the problem with Christianity. You took an old religion and you combined it with a new religion. And even in the New Testament, in the Gospels of Jesus, there's a big thing about how you don't put new wine into old wineskins. And because they'll burst, all right? The wine and the skin, they have to grow together. They have to get older together, right? You know, that's the problem. They keep trying to take the old wineskins and then the new knowledge, the new information, they keep trying to push it into that. And it keeps bursting every time. It never will work. You know, the thing that Jesus came around to do was actually to free man from the curse of the law. That's the thing that gets lost in translation a lot. Everyone's looking for an exact verse where he talks about that. It's not so much in a verse, in something that he said particularly, but it is in the way that he lived his life. People take things too literally. Sometimes you actually have to look. It's like, it feels like Ferris Bueller. He's like, hey, sometimes you just have to stop and look around or whatever, you know, and experience life, right? You can't just keep experiencing it through stories and through what you read. You have to go out and see the world. And, you know, this is the problem. When people actually look at the life of Jesus, they're more interested in the little particular verses and what he said and what he did, but they're not actually interested in his life as a whole. They don't really look at the whole picture, because if they did, they would realign their lives to live more like that. You know, you don't just become a puppet or a parrot of someone. You take on the essence of who they were. When someone inspires you, that's what you do. You don't become them exactly. You don't start just quoting what they've said, but you try to live your life in a similar fashion that has dignity, where you share love and compassion with others. And that's the whole point. And so when you try to take these old ideas, they conflict with the new ideas that Jesus talked about, right? So whether you accept him as a savior or not, or whatever, even if he was real or not, because trust me, there's plenty of materials out there, and I encourage everyone, if you're interested in any of it, go read it. Go read about like who maybe Jesus actually was. There was a book that was written a little while ago, maybe a couple years ago, which actually is by an author who looked into the historical Jesus, about actually who was the guy, like trying to, you know, dispel myth from actuality, from factuality, right? I remember there was a TV network that liked to say something like that. But anyway, you know, it's something that I think that is worthy to take your time. And even if you just take this as a model, as an idea, just the same way that you would take a superhero like Batman or Superman. Because trust me, I live up my life sometimes to the expectations, like, Batman would do this. I want to be more like Batman, or I want to be more like Superman, or I want to be more like Captain America. Maybe I want to be a little bit more like Tony Stark, right? We all have these ideas. If, you know, even if they're fictional or factual, it doesn't matter. Sometimes you just live your life up to a code, and when it comes to Jesus, I'm like, then, okay, you say you follow him, you do believe he was literal, you do believe that he was the Son of God, then why aren't you living your life closer to who he actually was? Why are you trying to go out in the world and be more assaulting of a group of people? This is not what he did. So that's the only thing I really have to say about all of that, you know, but it was the point that I wanted to make to that particular pastor, and I did. Will he hear it? I don't know. But it's also a point that I want to make to other people too, because look, I have a lot of people that I know from my past. You know, some of the most amazing people who were so supportive of me were people who were able just to kind of open their eyes and see me as a real person. You know, I challenge anyone, especially from a person who comes from a religious background, your ideas will change about anything once you actually get to know the people who are behind them. Because see, for many, homosexuality and being transgender and all these things that are now hot button issues in our country, in our society, they don't know a single person who identifies as one. You know, like the closest thing that they know of a transgender person is Caitlyn Jenner. The closest thing they know of as a gay person is Ellen DeGeneres, right? They don't actually know anyone in their life because they live in the South. And the truth is they actually probably do. They probably know quite a few. But the reality is they live in a society that is oppressive against people like that. And so those people stay in the closet like we are back in the 1950s. But when you actually get to know people, your heart changes. It's like families who in the last few years have started to understand and realize that their children are, they don't fall inside of these normal, typical, traditional standards that we hope our children grow up to be, right? At least in their society. I don't ever hope for a child to be normal, you know? I'm like, I just want any person to be who they're supposed to be. Whatever feelings, whatever dreams, whatever aspirations that they have. Like, I don't want every child who grows up to be an artist or a creative type. No, if they are, they are. Great. But if they're scientists, engineers, you know, if they're people who pursue other paths in their life, if family is far more important than career, I don't care. If they want to go spend their time and spend their love with a person of the same gender, or they're exploring their own gender identity because they don't feel right in the one that they were identified in as when they were born, that's absolutely fine. I don't care. Because in truth, we just need to get to a point, instead of trying to put everyone in a box and checkmark things and say, well, you fall in this group and I have to spend time away from you. It'd be a totally different story if everyone just got used to the idea, get to know people before you judge them. That's it. Not to say you can't judge people, just get to know people before you judge them. Because what I tell you happens every single time is that most people, all the preconceived notions and ideas that were put in their head or that they had go away. You know how many people who I came out to who had this idea of what being transgender was and have completely changed now in their life, in the way that they think and the way that they see people? I saw people who were very standoffish when I first came out, but now completely happy, were changing their photo over to the rainbow filter because they know somebody who connects them in. It makes it real. It's not just an idea. It's not just something that they're supposed to hate, because for them to hate it means that they actually have to hate me. They can't dissociate now with this idea of the sin and who I am, because it is a part of me. Things change when you allow people into your life, when you're actually open, when you actually open your heart to people and you actually look at them for who they are. So it's a very important thing, I think, that we need to carry forward going into the next battles that we have, because, you know, we are going to continue to have battles. They're never going to end. It's not over. Just because we got marriage equality, please take the moment, celebrate. I know many people have, and I know that celebration is well deserved. But then, once you're done, get ready for the next uphill, you know, push that we have, because we are going uphill. It's not over. It doesn't get easier from here. It never does. It never has. And we still have a lot of battles as a culture, especially when it comes to other political rights movements, or political correctness or whatever. Political correctness is something that is truly awful and evil, and I'll have to talk about that more in the future, because, you know, it stopped us from having conversations. Like I said, I would rather people be open, because then you have the churches, and that's exactly what they are. They're politically correct. They don't say anything offensive, even though they may think certain things, because they come off as being accepting. In reality, they're not. They're not being supportive. They're not doing anything. You know, it's better for a person just to state exactly what's on their mind than trying to hide it. And that's something that I've really grown to just dislike in my life. Express what's on your mind. You may be in the wrong, but I'll still respect you more at the end of the day. I mean, look, you know, I would always try to emphasize to people to do it in kindness and love, always. All right? Because if you're not doing it in kindness and love, it makes you wonder why you feel so passionately and angry about something. Where did that come from? But if you are able to say something in kindness and love, people ask me, and they do it with kindness, about things in my life, sometimes inappropriate questions that they don't know any better. But I will still respond to them, and I'll inform them and educate them, and I will not assault them because of what they said or what they did. And they usually get very much better about being able to approach and broach a lot of these different subjects and topics as important. And so being a part of people's lives and showing who you are is actually far more effective than just talk and just defending points and trying to prove things to people. I think the whole point is you just have to stop proving things to people. It is not my agenda, because I already talked about how fruitless it is. And it is, because these little basic verses, they stop people in their tracks because they don't want to hear the truth. But when you experience something, and I mean truly experience something, you experience the life of another person. You see through their perspective. That will fundamentally change you. It cuts through all the bullshit. It cuts through all your ideas. It cuts through beliefs. That's why with all these children who are coming out, you have a lot of supportive families out there. I know there's a lot of kids who are being rejected and pushed out of their homes. And I, you know, for those, I am incredibly sorry that you live in a world where people are still this backwards. And all you need is a little love and acceptance in your life. But there are a lot of families, though, that are growing and learning and changing all over the country, all over the world. The only way to move forward is for people to actually see who we are and dispel all the ideas. A lot of people will keep, like, look, as long as there's people out there who are saying something negative, who are saying something awful, you know, there will be people who believe them. And the only way they stop believing them is when something comes along to disprove what they're saying. So we have to become the proof, the way we live our lives. The sad thing is, and I've actually told people this, when we actually start living more like Jesus than the people who say that they follow him, when they don't even see that in their own lives and they see it in ours, it's a really hard thing for them to reject and deny. And that's what we have to be, essentially. Is we have to pick up where they failed. And look, I know there's plenty of believers out there who are wonderful, fantastic, amazing, beautiful people. They're a part of this movement. They do live their lives in this way. And they're also not the ones who are usually going out there and screaming about how God is going to condemn us because we allowed gay marriage in our country. So anyway, guys, that's all I have to say. I'm pretty much done here. I think you get the gist of everything I'm trying to get to. And there's more conversation to have about all these things, but I just wanted to express a few of these things after the decision. I wanted to point out this too. Probably one of the happiest moments after the ruling came out was I saw on Twitter, there was a couple who immediately went to a courthouse in Arkansas. And that was where I was born. That's where I spent the first 10 years of my life. And I've done a lot of thinking in my life. How different would things have been for me had I not left that place? I don't know if I'd be alive today. I don't know if I could have survived in that environment. California was bad enough. How could I have made it there? And I was going through a lot of emotions and intense feelings. And my grandmother was not in any way supportive of me exploring my identity. So thank God I was with my mother out here in California. But it was a place that I never really looked back at and had much hope. You know, I mean, when marriage equality started popping up in different states, I'm like, everyone was like, no, Tennessee will be the last one. I'm like, are you sure? You know, because I'm like, there's going to be a big fight over that. And but to see it finally, things change there. And these two men who've been together with each other for a really long time to finally not only have their marriage recognized in the eyes of the law, but by others as well. It was a beautiful, wonderful thing that brought me to tears. And I was just really happy to see something that amazing in my lifetime. So now I can look back And as I said earlier at the beginning of all of this, we've had a lot of tragedies happen in our life, but that's another moment I'll never forget. I don't know the couple, and I never probably will, but I just think it's really special that people who are in love and deserve to be able to share life together with all the benefits that entail being a part of a marriage, because it's not just about love. A lot of it's about having rights, about having the ability to be with a loved one when they're in the hospital, or be entitled to their benefits, or a variety of different things that we all get benefits as being with a partner in marriage. They now have that access as well, and it is fantastic, and I am so happy. And that's just one of the stories I wanted to share with you guys before I quit here, just to bring things back to why everything's so beautiful and precious, and why we should work harder is because of moments like that. So guys, thank you so much for joining me. Please go friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/LNichols. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at LNichols. I post a lot more to Instagram than I do Twitter, so just a little hint there. Anyway, also the websites. LNichols.com is my personal blog. My diary, and of course, where I host the podcast and post a lot of pictures that I do modeling stuff. And also House of L is my art website, which I strongly encourage you to go check out and buy a print or something. I'm doing a lot of new artwork, and getting support in that way, guys, definitely helps me continue recording this podcast and doing what I love to do. And I know you're all very supportive in so many ways. You can find a new way to scrounge a few pennies together to buy a print or something like that. I'll sign it. I'll send it to you, and all will be merry and bright. So guys, thank you so much for joining me. And as always, stay extraordinary and escape the ordinary. Goodbye, everybody.